This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good evening, and this is Rock Ash, your host this week on The People Speak. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen by phone calling 716-748-0144, or if you have a smartphone or a computer, go to bbsradio.com, click on the listen icon. You can also participate during this show with calling questions for our guests, toll-free USA and Canada, 888-429-5472. Joining us tonight, John Barber will be talking about his new documentary, The Last Word on the Assassination. It is based on the Jim Garrison papers. Also featured in the documentary are Jim Mars, Dick Russell, and Joan Mellon. You can get The Last Word on the Assassination on Amazon.com. John Barber will also be making a live appearance speaking his mind at the JFK conference in Dallas and screening the Garrison tapes at the theater from 1 to 3 on Friday, the 21st. John, welcome to The People Speak.
Well, Rock, thank you so much for having me. And I must tell you, I love the fact that your show is called The People Speak. I'm a huge fan of call-in shows. As a matter of fact, when I originated the AM show on ABC in Los Angeles in 1970, we built the premise on having major news figures on the show and then opening the phones to the public. And even though we went on the air with a zero, because it was the first such show in Los Angeles, within 3 months we were bumping heads with the Today Show and became the most popular morning show in the country. And also, when I created Real People in 1979, the premise again was to let real people tell their stories. So I am a huge, huge fan of what it is that you're doing on your show, and I look forward to talking to the people who call in.
Right. I didn't want to pump in your autobiography there, John, because that would need another whole show in itself. Yeah, I was amazed. I was reading it last night. But, John, please tell us about Jim Garrison and what he is to you and how you came across that path and what went on to inspire you and your endeavor to get the truth out to the people.
Well, you know, Brock, when I started out in this business, I started out as a comedian. My hope in life, since I came from a severely dysfunctional, brutal family long before it was popular, and I was a huge fan of Jack Parr because I couldn't believe that somebody could just earn a living having a conversation with somebody on television, because I never heard conversations in my household. I only heard screaming, and so I decided that I was going to become a comic, because that's what Jack Parr and Johnny Carson did at the top of their show, and I became extremely successful at it. I did my first comedy album in 66. It was called It's Tough to Be White, with a line of notes by Dick Gregory, and I became a regular on the Dean Martin show. I opened for Bob Goulet and Bobby Darin in Las Vegas, Dionne Warwick around the country. And in 1969, I was signed as Merv Griffin's replacement when he left Westinghouse to go to CBS on his recommendation. I lost that show to David Frost, but I ended up on the AM show in Los Angeles. When I started, my mentor, believe it or not, Rock, was Red Fox. His name was John Sanford. That's why the show is called Sanford and Son. And in any event, Red had a line in his act that always stayed with me, and that line was, "Heroes ain't born, they're cornered." Well, Jim Garrison was accidentally cornered by his investigation into the John Kennedy murder, because when the Warren Report came out in 64, he believed the Warren Report until he had an accidental meeting with Hale Box, who was one of the dissenters of the Warren Commission. Now, let me tell you something. I believe, quite honestly, that the best things that happened to us in life all happened by accident. Well, the worst things are all well-planned. I mean, the Vietnam War was well-planned. The Bay of Pigs was well-planned. Obamacare was well-planned. But Snowden leaving America to reveal all the spying what NASA was doing was an accident. And my son was an accident. Well, anyway, I paid little attention to the assassination of John Kennedy would have happened in 1963 because, as an aspiring comic, what I lost was not a president to me. I lost the source of material. And so I had to write a whole new act. I was 30 years of age at the time. You may remember there was a fellow named Von Meter who had a multi-million dollar seller album called The First Family, which John Kennedy himself absolutely loved. But in any way, I'm on the AM show. Now, Jim Garrison arrests Clay Shaw in 1967, and this was 2.5 years before I got that show. And I believed the government when they said he was a kook. I believed CBS and NBC and ABC and the LA Times when they all said the guy's a kook and he's a grandstander. But they said that for 2 years. And, Rock, I said to my associates, I said, you know, if Garrison is such a kook and has nothing, why doesn't the government just get out of his way and let him fall on his face? Of course, they didn't. They tried for 2 years. What a lot of people do not know is that even though Jim Garrison lost the conspiracy case against Clay Shaw, he won the perjury case, but the federal government stepped in and prevented him from taking Clay Shaw to trial for perjury. The federal government was obstructing justice on their own. Anyway,
An everyday event.
Well, it gets worse, especially with Jim Garrison. Anyway, and we had fabulous guests on our show. Muhammad Ali, 90% of Americans wanted that Muslim locked up because he wouldn't go to Vietnam to kill yellow people. And he said, the yellow people haven't been as much trouble to me over there as white people in America. Jane Fonda, who was called Hanoi Jane because she had gone to Vietnam to help stop the war. We had, not only did we report the news, we made news, and it all helped because we opened the phones like you do. Anyway, Garrison loses his case. I'm not paying any attention to it, quite honestly. And one day, I'm in a bookstore, and I see this book called Heritage of Stone. And the author is Jim Garrison, so I wonder if it's the same Jim Garrison, Rock. So I pick up the book, and I open it, and I begin to read it. And I'm astounded at what it is that I see. I see that the Supreme Court had to order Time Life, who didn't want to release the Zapruder film to Garrison. They ordered Time Life to release the Zapruder film to the Clay Shaw trial, which was the first time any civilians ever saw that film. There was a Dr. Zink who was prevented from assisting in the autopsies by generals and admirals who was called as a witness. Now, here's something that most people don't know about the Warren Report. When Garrison was trying to get Shaw into a courtroom, he was protecting Clay Shaw's rights. First of all, Clay Shaw was a raging homosexual. But Jim Garrison would not allow any of that testimony into court. He wasn't a character assassin. He was trying the case. So what he did, he went through a grand jury who indicted. Then he went through a three-judge panel. Now, in the documentary, the Garrison tapes, Diamond, who is Clay Shaw's attorney, is on camera telling us that in order to get the case against his client thrown out, he introduces the Warren Report to this three-judge panel. And guess what the three-judge panel does? They throw out the Warren Report, calling it hearsay. Hearsay legally means it's just gossip. This is a fact never reported by the government or the mainstream media, and it's also ignored by a lot of people in the assassination community, which I'll get to. Anyway, I'm so astounded, Rock, at what it is I'm discovering. I pick up the phone and I call New Orleans. I get the DA's office, and this big bass baritone answers the phone, and I said, "Could I speak to Mr. Garrison, please?" And the voice says, "This is he." He even used correct English. And I said, "Mr. Garrison, my name's John Barber. We have a morning show here, the most popular show in the country. It's a call-in show. We won our first Emmy. I just picked up your book. I read your book last night." And he chuckled, and he said, "Oh, John, you must be the other one, because it only sold 2 copies. I said, "Well, listen, I would love to have you come on the show, and I'll interview you for half an hour. Then we'll open up the phones for an hour, and you'll be astounded, the people who want to talk to you." He pointed out, now this is 1970, he pointed out, Rock, that at that time, the Harris polls indicated that 81% of all Americans believed that Lee Harvey Oswald either had to have accomplices or that he didn't do it at all. And the other poll was that only 23% of Americans wanted a new investigation. So Mr. Garrison said to me, "John, what does that tell you?" I said, "Mr. Garrison, it says, I know what my mother and father did to conceive me in an alley or in a bar room or someplace, but don't ever tell me my mother's not a virgin." And he said, "John, that's a great title for a book," which, by the way, will be the title of my autobiography. So I book him on the show, and he says, "John, you'll never get away with it." And I said, "We're going to put you up at the best hotel. You'll travel first class." We booked him on the show. 2 weeks later, I was fired, and Jim Garrison was canceled. That was my first encounter, and all I wanted to do was to have a guest on to tell the story about his trial, which is the greatest murder mystery in American history, and I was prevented from doing so. Now, at the time, Rock, I became the first person in news to review movies and news, and the news director wanted me on the news, even though I was being fired to 3 times a week do movie reviews. Fans, when they heard I was leaving the show, gathered 10,000 signatures to keep me on the air. And a handful of them came to KABC in Los Angeles, confronted the general manager, and a fellow named John McMahon, and said, "You must keep John on the air." And he said, "Thank you, ladies," and off they went. So when they left, I said to him, "Mr. McMahon, you know, you should show people a little respect, and that, you know, I did do a great show, and we won an Emmy, and that you don't hate me, keep me on the air." Well, we battled for the 6 months that I did the show constantly because he didn't like my doing reviews and the rest of it. I said, "Just put me on the news."
Okay.
He said to me, "Fuck the public, they don't hire you." And so I was out. I ended up at L.A. Magazine for 10 years as a film critic, and then Tom Brokaw brought me to KNBC in Los Angeles, where I won 3 more Emmys and a Golden Mike as their critic at large. Now, I had never seen Garrison, but between 1973, when I started at KNBC, and 79, when I created Real People, I spoke to him 3 times on the phone. I spoke to him about Vietnam. I spoke to him naturally about Watergate, because some names at Watergate also popped up in Dallas. So that's where we are.
Wow, wow. You know, the thing about the mainstream media is, I believe it is all controlled, coordinated, but not just by the government. It is coordinated by the same people that are coordinating the government.
Well, that's true, but you want to know something? And I'll tell you something, because it's about the Garrison thing. When I had Ronald Reagan, when he was running for his second term as governor, he called our show to be on the show. And when I had Ronald Reagan on the show, you may not remember, Rock, because I don't know how old you are, but when I had Ronald Reagan on the show, there was such a thing called the Fairness Doctrine. Have you ever heard of it?
I've heard of the Fairness Doctrine, but...
I'll tell you exactly what it is. The Fairness Doctrine means if you have a Republican on for an hour, you have to have a Democrat on for an hour. You have a Democrat on for an hour, you have to have a Socialist on for an hour, which we did. And if the Nazi Party could prove that they could get 5% of the electorate, they would also come on, and we also had the head of the Nazi Party on, because we had to. The right. Fairness Doctrine was scuttled, and it was scuttled because of an appearance that Jim Garrison made on NBC over criminal charges that he brought against NBC, which we will get to much later. But as I said, I was just interested in telling a story. I wasn't deeply involved in the assassination and who done it and all the rest of it. I just now was becoming more and more suspicious. I'll tell you about and you know, television is also censored because the people who run it are sometimes afraid of what the government will say. I'll tell you of the time that I became most aware of the suspicions of the public about probably the corruption and the lying of the government, especially over the Warren Report. And that, again, happened to me by accident. I was doing my second Dean Martin show. The year was 1967. Now, they tape the dress rehearsals, and then they edit the best of that, and they do it with a live show, which is not really live, but they call it a live show. They edit the two best together. Anyway, Greg Garrison, who was the producer, he books me on the show because he'd seen me on Merv Griffin's show, which I was on regularly. Anyway, I had this really corny kind of cute opening routine about my mother being Scotch and my mother being Jewish, my father being Scotch, which just proves you can mix anything with Scotch. Except as a kid, I had a hard time learning to play Havana Gila on the bagpipes. Well, it's cute and funny, and the audience liked it. Anyway, Greg Garrison stops the tape during the dress rehearsals, and he says, "John, you know, you do a lot of political stuff that I like. Do you think you could do a political joke that might hold up after a couple of years in reruns?" And I said, "Give me a few minutes to think about it." Now, the audience was in on the conversation, so they're really pleased it's behind the scenes at show business. Well, at the time, Rock, the big news in the country was Lyndon Johnson's daughter, Linda, was engaged to an airman, a pilot named Charles Robb, and that Earl Warren said publicly that he would like to perform the service. So I thought of this, what I thought was a great joke. So I called Greg, the producer, and I said, "You want to hear what I'm going to do?" And he said, "No, I trust you." So he said, "Okay, lights, camera, action, the applause, the music." Cameras come up on me, and I said to the audience, "You know, you've been hearing a lot about the fact that Lyndon Johnson's daughter, or Linda, is engaged to this pilot, Charles Robb," and the audience smiles. "And you also heard that Earl Warren, the Supreme Court Justice, wants to perform the ceremony." And they all sort of smile. I says, "What you don't hear, though, is that Lyndon Johnson doesn't want him to perform the ceremony. And you know why?" And the audience starts nodding their head and smiling. I said, "Because he says to Earl Warren, he says, 'Listen, Earl, after the Warren Report, I don't want to look back in 20 years and find out my daughter isn't really married.'" Well, there was a huge, huge laugh. There was whistling and there was applause. I mean, it was the loudest legitimate laugh I have ever heard in television, and Greg hollers, "Cut, cut, cut, cut. John, come over here." So we cut, and the audience smiling, wondering what's going on. I go over, and they introduce me to a suit from NBC, who's a guy in charge of standards and practices. He said, "You can't do that joke." I said, "It's harmless. It'll last for, you know, years. You can't do that joke." I said, "Why?" And they said, "You're going to do the Jew stuff, or you're not going to do anything at all." So I never got to do that particular joke. But I must tell you, it gave me enormous insight. And the other thing that I'll tell you, ever since I was a comedian, I could tell you by what percentage what candidate would become president just by the reaction of the audience to the jokes that were told. I have never, ever been wrong. Sadly, well, I've been wrong on two of the
questions. We have questions from our audience. And, sure. You know, Alex in Scotland, he wants to know what you think of the men who killed Kennedy series that identified a guy named by Sorty and others responsible for killing JFK.
Oh, I'm glad he's from Scotland. I found my father in Scotland, in Edinburgh. He owned an advertising agency. I went there when I was a kid after he had left us. Anyway, I'm delighted to get a call from Scotland. I was spellbound by the series about the men who killed Kennedy. There was a lot of information in it, though, that frankly wasn't true. This was not a foreign hit. It wasn't Corsican assassins. It was a Central Intelligence Agency who murdered John Kennedy. When Jim Garrison arrested Clay Shaw, he said the Central Intelligence Agency killed our president. He said it on the news in 67. Now, he did not have the documents that were released this past year about Clay Shaw. Clay Shaw was a major asset of the Central Intelligence Agency. Now look at the Central Intelligence Agency. They tell John Kennedy to go into the Bay of Pigs. So reluctantly he goes in, and then they say, you need air support. And he says, finally, no air support. So anyway, the Bay of Pigs is a disaster. 1,200 men are captured. Everybody involved with that wanted John Kennedy killed. So what happens after he's shot down in Dallas? And not when I was Dionne Warwick's opening act in Chicago, they had found snipers in Chicago that were tracking him. And in the documentary, the Garrison tapes, we have the information from the tapes that the FBI had from a guy named Joseph Miltier talking about how they were going to get him at Florida. They were tracking this man for months to murder him. Okay.
Now listen, John, when he's murdered, go ahead.
They appoint Alan Dulles, the head of the CIA, to shut down the Warren Report. There was never an investigation. The CIA took over that. And if we get to the House Select Committee in a little bit, I'll tell you how they took over that, too. Anyway, you thank that gentleman in Scotland for calling. I wish I could have heard him.
Great. And we have a question from Frank in Missouri. Was anyone involved in the cover-up of the assassination other than LBJ, J. Edgar Hoover, and the Warren Commission?
Well, in the documentary, the Garrison tapes, Jim Garrison said if they did not have assets in the media, they would have never done it because they needed people to spread the lies before the truth took root. I was hoping, I could not get any distributor in this country to release the documentary and play it across the street from Oliver Stone's JFK. They avoided it like poison. No network would air it, no cable station. It won the San Sebastian Film Festival Award. Werner Herzog took me over to Vienna and gave me an award for it. And in spite of its enormous success, they still won't air it. But in any event, had I made the money I hoped to make with all the materials I have from Jim Garrison, I was going to do part two of the Garrison's tapes and call it The American Media and the Second Assassination of John Kennedy. There were cover-ups beginning with Dan Rather. Dan Rather went on CBS. He said he had just seen the Zapruder film. And what does he do? He tells us what John Kennedy is wearing. He tells us about the pink suit and the pillbox hat that his wife is wearing. He's telling us about the cowboy Connolly and what he is wearing, everything down to detail. He says, now I can't show you anymore. He stops it. He says it because it's too brutal. He says, now the president struck on the head, and his head flies violently forward. Any idiot looking at that Zapruder film knows that his head went backwards and to the left. So Dan Rather lied from the beginning, was in on the cover-up, and he became the anchor person for CBS. And CBS was created and founded by one of the leaders of OSI, which was American intelligence in the Second World War.
Do you think that the Central Intelligence Agency might have inquired the help of the Mossad or the Mafia or?
Okay, that's a really good question. There are a lot of people that say the Mossad's in this. Okay, let me ask you a question, Rod.
Sure.
Even though six major corporations own most of the news media now, and if you look at the names of the owners, they're Jewish names, and God bless them, they deserve to own it because they worked hard and they bought it. But do you think that they could force the government not to tell the truth? No. Now, let me tell you about John Kennedy. John Kennedy hated AIPAC, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, and tried for 2 years to get them registered as a foreign lobby. And AIPAC fought it in court. And also, he hated the fact that the Israeli government wouldn't open up their nuclear facilities to inspection by the United States. They refused. As a matter of fact, to this day, Israel is the only country that's never signed the Non-Proliferation Pact. They're also the only country in the world that doesn't have defined borders. But while a couple of their underlings may have been involved in the assassination was planned from the top, by the top.
Okay.
By the CIA.
Yeah, because I was doing my own research on Jack Ruby, and he was a guy that took out Oswald. And his full name was Jack Leon Rubinstein.
Right, it was. But so, let me tell you. Okay, you said something really interesting. He said he took out Oswald. Okay, Rock, right. Let me ask you. If you're on the Warren Report, and you're one of the investigators, oh, of course, Lee Harvey Oswald's dead. Mm-hmm. The guy who kills him is Jack Ruby. What are one or two questions that you would ask Jack Ruby about why he shot Lee Harvey Oswald? You would say, why did you do it, or who told you to do it? That's
exactly
the obvious CIA question, CSI question, right?
Yep.
Jim Garrison was the only person who not only asked that question, but found out the name of the guy who gave Jack Ruby the orders to shoot Lee Harvey Oswald. And it's an additional piece of material that is in The Last Word on the Assassination. The Last Word on the Assassination includes the Garrison tapes, this new piece of material, and a panel of Joan Mellon, Dick Russell, and Jim Mars, who are absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, What?
I still don't
believe that Jack Ruby died in jail.
Well, Jack Ruby, in the documentary, you see him begging Earl Warren, please take me to Washington where I can talk. They didn't want him to talk. The same way the federal government didn't want Osama bin Laden to talk, because they would have found out that Osama bin Laden, who was not even on the FBI's most wanted list, had nothing to do with 911. They were Arabs, supposedly. They were Arab passports. It was all a pretext to get the oil in Iraq. And we're fighting phantom terrorists that don't even exist. It is all bullshit. The Cold War is over. Now, what is the war machinery going to do if they can't make billions of dollars with tanks and planes and guns? They got to have some enemies, so they invent these fake terrorists. Do you think Iraqis can invade the United States? Do you think Afghanis living in tents and in caves are going to invade the United States? That's all a crock of invented crap, for crying out loud. Gore Vidal said it's like having a war on dandruff.
Are you ready for this, John?
Yes,
a lot of Zionists, and I want to say a lot of Zionists are putting out the propaganda, and a lot of evangelical Christians and born-agains think that this propaganda of ISIS coming here to attack the United States is real. They don't realize that it's just propaganda made to keep them in fear so they can take their rights from them.
Listen, they've been stealing our rights ever since the Oklahoma City bomb. Look at Waco, for God's sake. That's when all this started. Do you think it's necessary for the military of the United States to invade a compound, a religious compound, regardless of the makeup or the psychiatric character of the guy who runs it. Bill Clinton murdered 87 women and children in there. They could have just starved them out, for crying out loud. Bill Clinton signed NAFTA, which sent all our manufacturing jobs out of the country. He also scuttled the Glass-Steagall Act, which was put into place by Roosevelt to save capitalism from a socialist revolution and would prevent the banks from gambling. Now, Clinton repeals that, and in 2008, the banks have the freedom to send this country's economy absolutely into the toilet, from which it will never, ever recover.
That's true, and I have to leave you right there for a quick radio announcement and a quick break so we can have a little time to talk ourselves. We'll be right back with our guest, John Barbour. And don't forget, go to Amazon.com and get his new documentary called The Last Words on the Assassination. We'll be right back here on The People Speak.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to VBS
Radio.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
Welcome back to The People Speak. This is Rock Cash with our guest, John Barbour. And thank you, Don Newsom, awesome sound engineer at the BBS Radio Network. John, let's get back on what we were discussing. Now, Jim Garrison, what was his role?
Well, Jim Garrison was the district attorney of New Orleans who happened to believe the Warren Report until he met a dissenting member, a guy named Hale Boggs, who vanished mysteriously in a plane crash and was never found. But he said to Garrison that that man, the Carcano, couldn't kill a rabbit. And so Garrison got three sets, 26 volumes at times three sets. He had one in the office, one in the car, and one in his home, and he practically memorized it. And after he read it, he said the only way you can believe the Warren Report is by not reading it. So So he opened up his investigation, and that's when the federal government moved in to try to shut him down. And let me tell you how I happened to actually end up doing the documentary. I created real people in. Well, I'm going to tell you something about the House Select Committee and assassinations very quickly. The only time America had a chance to get to the truth was back in 1978 when Dick Gregory was on Geraldo Rivera's show and showed the Zapruder film. And hundreds of thousands of Americans were so outraged at the crap that Dan Rather and the government had told them about the head going forward that they flooded Congress. Congress was under public pressure to create the House Select Committee. The first chief of the House Select Committee was a guy named Richard Sprague. When he gathered his crew together, his first instructions to them were, you will not hire anybody from the FBI as an investigator. You will not hire anybody from the CIA because we're investigating them. He gets a call from the head of the CIA saying, you better come over to Langley, Virginia here and have a little conversation. And Sprague says, no, you better come over here for a little conversation. And on your way, stop by your file cabinet and fill up your car with your secret documents because we're coming after you. Well, the Central Intelligence Agency in the 70s, through the Church Committee, had 1,000 paid assets in the United States media, CBS, ABC, NBC, Time Life. They were saturated with CIA agents in the 70s. Imagine what they are now. Anyway, they get their assets in Congress, which they have, and their media assets, to get rid of Sprague. They replace him with a guy named Robert Blake. He's supposedly a law professor for Columbia, who hires nothing but CIA, publishes a book blaming the mafia, and dedicates his book to the Central Intelligence Agency. Well, you tell me who murdered John Kennedy and shut it down. It's a Central Intelligence Agency. Now, I'm speaking at Judith Berry Baker's JFK conference on the 22nd in just a couple of days. It'll be my one and only time at these events, Rock, and I'll tell you why. There are dozens of these sites, a lot of them really good people. A lot of them are my friends. Once a year, they meet in New Orleans or Dallas or New York or Pittsburgh or some place and hold these conferences, a lot of bright people. And it's all a total waste of time and energy. They're going to have a moment of silence in Dallas on November 22nd. As sympathetic as I am about that, it's only a feel-good moment for those people. We've had 50 years of silence from the federal government. What we need are moments of outrage. And all of these assassination sites should dispense with all their various meetings. And once a year, November 22nd, should be America's Bastille Day, where we march 50,000 or 100,000 strong to the Justice Department, to the White House, and say, open the files. There is nobody willing to do that. Because what happens when a leader pops up who wants to fight the federal government? They murder him. They murdered Robert Kennedy. They murdered Martin Luther King. They murdered Malcolm X. They're masters at murdering the leaders who oppose them. So anyway, that's why I'm speaking there at that one and only time. Because if they continue to do what it is they're doing, no matter how well-meaning they are and how informed they are, they're doing what the government and the CIA wants them to do, which, as Bob Dylan said, is just blowing in the wind.
Have you ever heard of Abraham Bolden?
Yes. As a matter of fact, he's one of my friends on Facebook, and I have an enormous admiration and affection.
Yeah,
he's
a great man. He's a great patriot to the Constitution and to the people of the United States. The thing is, there is a lot going on, as well as, you know, as much as you know and as much as I know and everything else. And it seems like when we're trying to get the stuff out to the people, a majority of the people tend to fall for The conspiracy theorists. They don't realize that that word.
Let me tell you something, Rock. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm a conspiracy exposure. That's what Jim Mars is. That's what Dick Russell is. That's what Joan Mellon. That's what most of these people are. They're not theorists. They're detectives who are trying to expose the conspirators. And those conspirators are the federal government, the major media, and the Central Intelligence Agency. And I'm going to tell you a heartbreaking story about how I happened to actually do the documentary with Jim. Real People became the most popular show in American history, and very few people know about it. In the Midwest, it used to get a 50 share, which was much more than MASH and I Love Lucy and a lot of these really good situation comedies. Real People beat them all. We used to get 25,000 pieces of mail. The owner of the show was a guy named George Slaughter. What when you own a show? Now, George is sort of like Jerry Jones of the Dallas Cowboys. He owns a team and owns a stadium, but he doesn't know how to play the game. I was the quarterback. For the 3 years it was the number one show, I wrote nearly every hour and edited, supervised the editing myself. He is offered a show called Speak Up America by NBC. And it's sort of a ripoff of the movie Network. You remember that movie with Peter Finch? I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Well, this was going to be a man on the street show ripped off of Network, and they were going to talk about news of the day. And George kept coming to me asking me to help him with the show because it wasn't doing well. I didn't have the time, Rock. I said, I can't. Anyway, on page 8 of the L.A. Times in 1980, I read that the House Select Committee on Assassination concludes, because they have recordings of 4 gunshots being fired, that if there were more than 3, there was obviously a conspiracy, so somebody else was there besides Oswald. So there was a conspiracy to kill both.
Of course, my suspicions is that it was, I believe that George Bush Sr. had something to do with it.
George Bush Sr. was CIA. He was in our documentary. We see that he was in Dallas. He was exposed as a CIA agent, believe it or not, by J. Edgar Hoover, who wrote a memo saying, I just interviewed George Bush of the CIA, who was in Dallas. And Jim Mars expands on this in the documentary. Now, look at this. This guy's CIA. He becomes head of the CIA, and what happens after that? He becomes president of the United States. Right. What do you think would happen?
It seems like all criminals and vile criminals get to become president.
Okay, now I want to get back to the business of how we actually got. Jim Garrison did not give an interview from 1970 to 1980. So when I read this article, I called him and I asked him, do you feel vindicated? He said, John, I feel like a blind man who got a small trophy in a dark room, only I know I got it. I said, well, are you telling your story to Walter Cronkite and all these people? He says, nobody's called. I said, you're kidding. Huntley and Brinkley? Dan Rather? Nobody's called? He said, you're the first person to call me. And I said, well, I'm going to come down and tell your story. He said, John, I haven't given an interview in 10 years. I said, I don't care. You'll give one to me, and I'm coming down. Well, he loved the show, Real People, as did his family. So we went down there. We put him on tape for 3.5 hours. This is how I happened to lose the best show in America, my own show.
Wow.
When I'm
what? Hang on real quick. We've got a caller. We got Mike on line one. Mike, go ahead.
Hello. Great show. I was wondering, does John feel that the assassination of JFK changed America to the point that what we have in place politically today is the result and it will never change? It pretty much cemented and put fear into all politicians that you can't cross a certain line as far as changing our currency, as far as our foreign relations, etc.
Oh, Mike, that's an absolutely great question. My first response is, and my only response is, that was the day that changed America and the world forever. I don't know, Mike, if you ever heard of a comedian by the name of Bill Hicks. Bill Hicks could have been bigger than Lenny Bruce or George Carlin. he had the single greatest joke about the assassination that I ever heard. Unfortunately, Bill died when he was 33. And the joke is this. He said, folks, do you think the president runs the country? Well, let me tell you what happens when they elect the president. The heads of the CIA and the heads of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, they gather in the White House, and they put a tape on the television. They tell the president to sit down and take a look. And what is he looking at? He's looking at John Kennedy's head being blown off, but from another point of view. That is such a brilliant joke because it suggests that the CIA had separate cameras other than this guy's Abraham Zapruder. You also mentioned the economy. What a lot of people don't know is that the Federal Reserve is private banks that own the country. They literally finance the United States and its wars. John Kennedy wanted to put an end to the Federal Reserve, which is a private bank, and he felt the American government constitutionally should print its own money. So he signed an executive order, and the executive order, which you can Google, is 11111, and it called for the United States Treasury to print silver certificates. They were published for 6 months until November 22nd at 12:30, when he had his head blown off. The printing presses stopped immediately. That executive order has never been rescinded, but it's never been put back into effect. They murder them all, and when we get around to it, I'll tell you why Sirhan did not shoot Robert Kennedy, and we can prove it. And on the air, we can prove it. But, Mike, that's a great question. America's done. It's not USA anymore. It's CIA. And I don't think, I mean, the closest we got to maybe having somebody, Ralph Nader would have been a good choice, but they wouldn't let him into debates. Ross Perot, who was a billionaire, paid for his own airtime, and he had to shut down because they threatened to murder his daughter. And he said it publicly, so he shut down. They're experts at killing the opposition. The 1% own the 99%.
Wow.
I agree. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. I've also got a question from Mike in Illinois, and he wants to know, let's see, where did it go? Here we go. Okay, he wants to know, John, when has a defector to the Soviet Union ever been allowed to repatriate themselves in America? But I don't think he was repatriating himself. He was CIA also.
He was CIA all the time. It has come out now. There are just tons of documents, and there are tons of researchers who've discovered all that. But let me tell you, he was a spy all the time. It's that simple. There's something else about these researchers, and there are brilliant ones. And you can see them on C-SPAN all the time talking about all the CIA documents. There is no researcher who will ever find a CIA document that says, we killed John Kennedy. So you can never find that document, so you can never bring charges. But if you look at the Warren report alone, there is enough obstruction of justice there and misleading information from Dan Rather on down that you can bring obstruction of justice charges against LBJ, against the CIA, against the FBI, against NBC, against CBS, against ABC. You can bring all of these charges. But who in America has the courage to do that? I mean, those facts exist. They broke the law. And nobody is standing up to say, hey, you have to answer for the laws that you have broken.
Right, because our district attorneys and our prosecutors don't have the balls to stand up to anybody.
That's why I'm suggesting that all these... And let me tell you something also about the assassination. I have to get back to how I put Jim Garrison on camera and how I lost the job because NBC deliberately slandered Garrison. I tried to get Garrison to sue. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do that first. I'm sorry to sort of take over like that, but this is a crucial story about the media. When I interviewed Garris, I asked him, how many shooters were there, Mr. Garrison, do you think? He said, well, it's triangulation. That's what the military uses. So you have three snipers, and also somebody retrieved the shells so that you have three teams of two. But since this is such an important kill, John, they have to have a radio operator to coordinate it. So there are three teams of three. And I say to him after that, well, Mr. Garrison, how many people do you think actually knew that he was going to be murdered in Dallas? So he said, it's all done on a need-to-know basis. That's how the secret society works in the intelligence community. But I would say 32. Anyway, I'm on this show, Speak Up America. I tell George Slaughter, I said, George, the story is so fabulous, it has to be in two parts. So I do the first part. And the first part opens up with Jim Garrison leading forward. This is the first time on national television, live at 8 o'clock at night, and Garrison's looking at the audience and saying, Lee Harvey Oswald had nothing to do with the assassination. Matter of fact, he never fired a rifle. The paraffin tests prove it. Well, the audience is dumbfounded because they've heard nothing but bullshit from the government, okay? The ratings are phenomenal, and everybody's waiting for the second episode. So I edit together the second episode. Now, the host of the show was a former evangelist by the name of Marjo Gordner. So the audience, everybody is waiting for this moment. Now, I'm at home because it's the only story I'm doing for that. I'm building a new house, so I'm with my young child and my wife and watching the show. And Marjo Gordner comes on camera, and he said, Mr. Garrison, how many shooters were there? And they cut to a close shot of Garrison. And Rock, guess what he says? He says, 32. And then my phone rings, and it's George Slaughter. He said, John, what do you think? And I start yelling at him, what did you do? What did you do? He said, Garrison's a nut. I said, you're a nut. What are you doing? That's not the story that I gave you. He said, Garrison's a kook. I said, George, he's not. And I hung up, and I started to cry. And I called only the second time in my life I ever cried. I called Garrison in New Orleans. I'm sobbing, and I say, Jim, I didn't do this. I don't know how this happened. He said, calm down, John. Calm down. He said, I'm used to it. I said, but Mr. Garrison, I edited the story. It was supposed to be three. I don't know how it happened at 32. You sue them. This is deliberate libel. I have a recorded phone call that says he thinks you're a kook. He did it deliberately. You would own NBC. He said, John, calm down. If I spent all my life in court for the slanders that have come my way, I would never see my family. We love your show. Keep doing just real people and send me some real people T-shirts. The next day, I confronted George Slaughter and Donna Cantor, who was the woman that I had hired to be the supervising producer. And I said, Donna, why didn't you call me? She started sobbing, too. She said, I was ordered not to call you. And I begged Garrison again to sue. And, of course, my days with Slaughter and NBC were over. Let me tell you, in 1981, I was getting $22,000 a show and $11,000 for a rerun. That's $33,000. And I didn't care that I risked it because I wanted Garrison to sue, but he never sued. So now I continue to work in the business, but the only person who calls me is Sinatra. And why does Sinatra call? Now, wait till you hear this story. And it's about how I lost something major, again, because of assassination stuff. In 1977, they have the revival of Laugh-In, which is a show that introduces Robin Williams to the public. I am one of the four principal writers. And it's my material, the only material, that Sinatra will do. And when he finds out who it is, he hires me for 5 years to be his gag writer and his speech writer and his letters to the editor writer, some of which showed up in Kitty Kelly's book, My Way. Anyway, one day we're having
John,
a conversation.
John, what? I'm sorry. I've got to cut you off. I'm down to 30 seconds left on the clock here. Maybe we can have you back on again here at the People Speak. To the audience, make sure you join us next week. We will have Paul Hellyer, former Canadian defense minister, on UFOs, alien cover-up by the government. Joining us this week, it should be a good show. Once again, John, thank you, and hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
Okay,
this is Rob Cash
so much, Rob.
On The People Speak. Wishing everybody a good week. Thank you, Don Newsom.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.